This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger, inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
No, it's not it.
There goes the glorious Yankees lead. Into the gap, and two runs are going to score. Judge, Gregorius, Sanchez delivers.
No, it's not this.
A home run by Derek Jeter. He is.
No, it's not this.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to episode 58 of the Bomber Brothers podcast, part of the Pinstripe Alley community of podcasts. Sean and Ryan here, as always, and here to recap another previous Yankee season. This time we're doing 2009, the last team to win a World Series. Before we dive into this, Sean, I guess the only current events really...
Trevor Plouffe making waves.
Yeah, Trevor Plouffe using his sources to that was eventually backed by Jeff Passan regarding teams starting, preparing to send out proposals to the Players Association that would include restarting spring training as early as June 10th and then hoping to start in early July. Again, this is just something that you just have no idea how real it is because that's still a ways away and we really don't know how under control this situation is going to be by then and we don't know how the players are going to feel about playing by then or what the outlook is going to be in terms of the virus containment itself. So, hard to get excited about stuff like that. But hearing about baseball in early July, just a couple weeks before my 30th birthday, that would be pretty awesome. Given how long it's been, I would probably spend the entire month doing nothing but watching baseball. Probably won't be able to go to games or anything like that because I'd imagine it's not going to be with fans involved. But we'll see. I mean, in the meantime, we have the KBO.
Yeah, I haven't really watched much of the KBO, but from what I've watched, I haven't really been distracted by, anything in terms of the way they've altered their game.
No. Yeah, I stayed up late the first night to watch it, and I mean, the absence of fans wasn't too, glaring, at least not from watching on TV. So, I'm all for it as long as it's safe for the players involved, and obviously I'm sure a lot of it depends on if they can get widespread testing throughout the league and things like that. But it'll be interesting to see the comfort level of players if that is the proposal and that's the case, to see if they're comfortable coming back that soon.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like things have taken a turn for the better as of late, but still ways away. If they think it's safe and we can get some baseball, that's great. But I mean, safety comes first. So You know, we'll see. I mean, I'm more hopeful this week than I have been that we'll see a little baseball this year, even if it's some Fugazi tournament towards the end of the year. But yeah. I don't know if we'll start in July, but we'll see. I mean, it's only May 7th, so we'll see where things go.
Absolutely. The other news, I guess, was regarding Aaron Judge, and his rib is still healing. I guess that's not really news. I mean, ribs take a long time to heal. So Judge is still healing. They, you know, they said even if opening day is soon, he still might not be fully healed by then. So
could you imagine if the season started on time, we'd be freaking out? Like, it's May 7th. We still haven't seen him.
Yeah. People will be freaking out if it's almost July 1st and they still haven't said, you know, Judge will definitely be ready to go.
Speaking of ready to go, it was like last week I meant to bring it up, but did you see the video Gary Sanchez posted? It was just like, I'll be ready. And it was just like a mixtape of him working out. Nobody gets me more hyped from their workout videos than Gary Sanchez. I get so excited when I see them.
Yeah. I love Gary. So I'm definitely missing him hitting bombs like he was at this time in 2019 when he was like
carrying the team. Him and Luke Voit. Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun.
Cool.
All right, so go ahead.
I was going to say the 2019 did a lot of mashing.
Yeah, they did. I mean, any team with Mark Teixeira and Alex Rodriguez are going to do a lot, and Robinson Cano are going to do a lot of mashing. This was arguably one of the best infields of all time, and they certainly played that way. You look at everyone in the infield, there's OPS pluses of 141, 121, 125, 138. It was
not bad.
No, it was stacked. Obviously, it took long for some of them to get going because A-Rod was hurt coming into the season and Teixeira was struggling without A-Rod protecting him in the lineup for the first while, and he was also adjusting to his new surroundings and playing in New York for his first season. But I guess before the season started, didn't even know if Teixeira was going to be on the team, and he was the cherry on top of a massive spending spree when the Yankees acted like the Yankees and broke the bank to get some superstars like CC Sabathia and Teixeira.
Yeah, I just remember after 08 was kind of a flop with the closing of the new stadium, it just felt like such a turning of the page between 08 and 09, sort of the way that you felt with getting Cole. Like, you knew this would be a big moment in Yankee history, big offseason in Yankee history. And the Steinbrenners delivered by reeling in CC and Burnett pretty much right away. And I mean, I think that was pretty much expected. You knew they were going to go after CC super hard. It was just a matter of if CC wanted to come to the East Coast and money talks, and they gave him the opt out and everything like that. They made a small move and got this, you know, Nick Swisher, who was going to be the first baseman, and Xavier Nady was supposed to play right field. Remember that?
Oh yeah.
Till he tore his UCL on a throw in Tampa. But anyway, I remember, like, I wanted Teixeira so bad, a switch hitter. He had killed the Yankees that year before. Remember, he hit like a grand slam against them earlier, like when he was with the Angels. Mm-hmm. Everything bad happens against the Angels. But I was walking out of Pizzeria Uno, and on the TV it comes up, the Yankees have signed Mark Teixeira, and I was like jumping up and down and screaming in the middle of Pizzeria Uno. I was so excited that they got Teixeira. And I really think that's what put this team over the top is that acquisition. I mean, he puts up a monster year. I think he has the highest OPS plus on the team, and is the second most valuable position player after Jeter in terms of WAR.
Yep.
And people forget how good Tex was his first couple of years in the Bronx. He was a beast. He hit 39 homers, 122 RBI. And he had an on base of .383, so pretty good.
Yeah, Teixeira,
pretty good.
Teixeira was incredible. I mean, he was one of those mega contracts that, you know, you saw the worth of the signing right away. And obviously, he also winds up having a huge moment in the postseason as well. So it was, it was great to have, you know, a big signing like that make such a big impact in his first year. I remember running and buying his jersey like whenever the first day that it came out in Champs or Modell's or wherever it was shortly after he signed. He was just that exciting of a signing. Like you said, he was an MVP caliber switch hitting corner infielder and just another dynamic bat. And just like thinking of him and A-Rod batting consecutively in that lineup was pretty exciting to think about. And then obviously on top of that, now you have a prolific ace to lead the pitching staff.
And a ridiculous glove too. I mean, think about how great he was defensively. I mean, insane. And he actually had, I mean, in my opinion, he had two huge hits in the postseason. One obviously being the walk-off in the division series against the Twins. But also, Yankees are down 1-0 in game two. The offense hasn't done anything against Cliff Lee and Pedro up to that point. And Teixeira wakes them up, hits a homer. I think that's an underrated home run that kind of gets the Yankees going in the World Series.
No, absolutely. That's probably the most important game of the season.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So before we get to that, we can obviously talk about the regular season. So what games stick out to you most? Obviously, there's a lot of
15 walk-offs.
Yeah, with all the walk-offs, a lot of pie in the face.
I remember they started off terribly. I mean, I was looking at their season thing, and on May 12th they were 15-17, which
and they couldn't beat Boston.
Oh yeah, and even they get up to 34-23 on June 8th, so in under a month they make an 11 game swing, and then they lose three straight to Boston again. Then they come in and play the Mets and get rolling again. But anyway, I mean, the things that stick out on a positive note are when the game A-Rod comes back is absolutely incredible. I was actually listening to John Stearns when that happened. I was on my way to go see the Killers and listened to the game on the radio before we went to concert. But I would say, like, that game's the first game that really sticks out in my mind. That crazy back-and-forth game on the second game of the new stadium was pretty good,
mm-hmm.
too. And then, I don't know, I just remember early on it was just like waiting for A-Rod to come back, and it was a weird feeling because you spent years not liking the guy and then you don't have him in the lineup and nobody's pulling their weight early on. I mean, Melky had a couple big hits, but Teixeira started off horribly. Yeah. Remember when he was just like slamming his helmet down but like not at full strength? Like he was so upset the one game. And, you know, Matsui didn't get off to the greatest of starts, I feel like. And you know, Burnett pitched some big games early, too. I remember that because Chiming Wong had nothing, and it winds up being, you know, a lost year for Wong. And CeCe had a bad first game, but Burnett pitches a couple big games early to turn around a couple series, and that really keeps them in the thick of things. And then, you know, you get to May, and they have the walk-off weekend and against the Twins after A-Rod is back. And they kind of get rolling from there, except not being able to beat Boston. One funny thing I saw on the first walk-off of the year, Michael Kay says, "A long day's journey into night comes to an end." And when A-Rod hits the walk-off against the Red Sox in the 15th, he said, "A long night's journey into day comes to an end." Dude, can you be any more cheesy? Like, because I watched all the walk-offs as we got ready for this episode. I'm like, wait, I just heard him say this, and it was just like he switched day and night.
Oh my God.
What a weirdo. Anyway, he's the worst. But when I ran into him in the garden, he reassured me that Jeter would be re-signed in 2011. So, good job. So yeah, I mean, I don't know which walk-offs you choose, but I kind of just remember they got rolling that weekend against the Twins, stumbled against the Red Sox, then got back up and just cruised the rest of the way. If they had played the way they played in the second half of this season, they'd be the greatest team of all time without a doubt. And I think the early struggles influence heavily the way that this team is remembered because this team was dominant.
Yeah, I mean, you like you said, you brought up the numbers. be under 500 through almost 35 games, and they wind up winning 103 overall. If you have a healthy A-Rod all season, this team could make a push towards the 98 Yankees in regular season win total. And for A-Rod himself, after what happened during the off season, and not just that, he was dealing with a hip injury, and for him to hit a home run on his first pitch back, I think was probably massive for him, especially given, you know, his postseason struggles before that, and just pretty much, you know, a lot of turbulence in October during his Yankee tenure. Obviously, this was still far from October, but that's what a lot of people knew him for. And I think it was important for him to hit that home run on the first pitch to kind of remind everyone, like, okay, he's had some postseason struggles, but this guy is probably the most valuable player on this team and has been for a few years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was a big moment and a sign of things to come. It's weird the way sometimes baseball foreshadows itself, but by the way, if they had played at their second half pace throughout the whole year, they would have matched the 114 win 98 team. So pretty good.
Yeah.
And this year also was, I don't want this to get lost. Robinson Cano's coming out party is really 2009. In my opinion, he hits 320, with a 25 homers. That's a monster year. And, I think part of the Yankees letting Matsui walk after the year is realizing they have a new middle of the order bat in Robinson Cano after a down 2008. He has a big year. They'll still eventually trade Melky to get him to focus more. But.
Right. And it's hard to keep track of all of them, but I believe both Melky and Cano had walk-offs during the regular season.
I think Melky had two.
Yeah, I know Melky had a couple.
You know what early on, too, a lot of those walk-offs were when they were losing. Like, Melky hit one against the Angels or Posada when they were losing, like, 8-7 or something like that. Melky had one where they were losing. And Cano hit two walk-off home runs, like, 2 weeks apart, I think, as well.
Yeah, so they had some. And A-Rod probably has the most memorable one of them all, which was...
The 15th against the Red Sox?
No, I was going to say the walk-off pop-up error.
he dropped the ball!
Yeah, it's just – I remember watching that game and just how, you know, it's like one of those things where A-Rod pops it up, slams the bat, and it's like, all right, you know.
I was reaching for
almost, the – Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. Almost about to just turn the game off. And the best part about – I think what was so great about that moment is you see Castillo just not quite able to settle under it. He has to, like, keep – you know, taking a few extra steps into the outfield, and you're like, oh shit, like this might drop. And I think what's lost in that moment is Teixeira, because he scores all the way from first on that pop up in the shallow right field. You know, give him credit. He was busting ass around the bases on what looked like a routine pop up that was gonna end the game. I think after you're like, oh shit, he dropped the ball, like the Yankees still have a chance, and then you're like barely even have time to realize, like, wow, like Teixeira's like rounding third already, like, and Teixeira's not a fast guy. He was just, there were two outs, and give him credit, he busted it right, you know, as soon as their contact was made.
Teixeira was very machine like in his fundamentals, and just that's exactly what he had to do. And I mean, that's what you're supposed to do, is run it out, two outs. So good. I wonder how much has to do with him running and how much has to do with, for some reason, when Castillo picks the ball up, he throws it to second base and not home. That's to me is the one of the weirder parts of that play that don't get remembered. But yeah, that was odd. But yeah, that was a crazy. And that was a really good game too. You know, people don't remember, but Mariano struggled early.
Yeah,
he blew a couple saves, and he blew a save that game too. He got brought in the eighth, and I think David Wright hit like a double off the right center field wall. Remember that whole season? It was about the jet stream to right center. Everything that was going out,
especially in the first series. We were at the first game at the new Yankee Stadium, which was not one to remember.
At least Posada hit the first homer.
Yeah, to like dead center, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then as that opening series got going, all the talk was about about the Jetstream, and the Yankees just get absolutely massacred a couple games later. What was it, like 22 to nothing or something like that?
Yeah, they got murdered.
Yeah, so yeah, I remember a lot of the talk being the Jetstream. I remember reading a couple articles where like scientists were like brought on to talk about it
because the new stadium was or the old stadium was still up. It was influencing the
yeah
being the thing.
Oh man,
I don't. It's 385 out there. I mean, these guys are major leaguers.
Yeah,
it's been like that forever.
All right, yes, but you did bring up another walk-off that stands out, which was A-Rod's walk-off off Tozawa when the Yankees started finally figuring out the Red Sox, because they started out, what, 0-8 against Boston that year?
Mm-hmm, and they finished 9-8.
And even,
or 10-8, yeah.
Yeah, 10-8. And even... You know, even when the Yankees started to turn it around overall, they were still struggling initially against the Red Sox, which, you know, obviously when it comes to Yankees Red Sox, it's easy to forget about any other success when you're getting absolutely dominated by your top rivals every game. But then they start to figure it out. A-Rod's walk-off certainly helps. There's obviously a bunch of other walk-offs during that season, but there's other memorable moments as well. Mo had his 500th save that year. Also had an RBI in the same game, right?
Yeah, against the Mets.
Yep.
Gardner almost had the cycle in that series against the Mets, but CeCe was running in front of him.
Yeah.
You know, he told that story on R2C2, and I was at that game, and I remember I was sitting in the upper deck, so I had a nice view of it, and CeCe gets on base, and then Gardner comes up and, you know, hits one down the line that you think is a double, but CeCe's running in front of him. And I remember after the game, I said to my wife, Gardner would have had the cycle. And then he brings it up on R2C2 10 years later. But Milky gets it eventually, another nice moment.
Yep.
Did you stay up for the whole Tozawa game?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Were we watching it together?
I don't think so. I think I was at Dad's.
I was at Dad's watching it. Maybe we were watching it together.
Maybe we were then.
Funny.
So let's see, what other moments are there that are not besides the walk-offs? There was the whole Brian Cashman visit to Atlanta.
Didn't Cervelli hit a big home run that game in Atlanta? That was a big thing in that game. He hit his only home run of the year, and that kind of got them going.
Yeah, Cervelli was not known for his power, but he stepped up because Posada and Jose Molina got hurt that year, and Cervelli stepped up. He was batting something like 270 or something, being a very more than serviceable third-string catcher. And, yeah, one of his biggest hits was during that series in Atlanta. Who knows what Cashman said or, like, what that visit was, but the Yankees absolutely went on a roll after that.
Yeah, I remember they played the Nationals and the Marlins, and they lost like 2 out of 3 both series before that. I remember that was another down moment. And yeah, then Cashman goes down to Atlanta, does whatever kind of devil magic Cashman works, and they were on to the races.
And away we go.
And away they went. Another big win. To me, the defining moment of the regular season is that 4-game set against Boston, because they're 0-8, 0-9 against Boston, 0-8 against Boston going into that series. And you're just, you know, you need to make a statement. They come out, they win the first game, Jabba versus John Smoltz.
Yeah, wasn't it like it was a pretty big slugfest, if I remember.
Yeah.
It was a high scoring game.
13-6.
All right, well, there you go.
And then the next night is the Tozawa game, 2-0. Then CeCe goes out, throws a gem. They win 5-0. And the next night, one of my more underrated games of the year, Pettitte goes out and shoves. A-Rod hits a homer to put them up. But then Phil Koch, I think it was, gives up a 2-run shot to Victor Martinez, who the Red Sox had acquired.
Oh, yeah.
And then... Then in the 8th inning, Damon and Teixeira go back-to-back and a belly-to-belly off Josh Bard.
Yeah.
And that was crazy. I was at that game. That was nuts. And then they sweep them in 4 games, which is absolutely incredible. And to me, that's sort of the statement series of the regular season. And after that, it was just cruise control to the division title.
Yeah, and then, you know, it's the Yankees had already, like, taken control of the division, and then they go to Fenway again later in the year and destroy them again, and kind of just, like, to let everyone know who's taking this division. And but yeah,
then the Red Sox come back and we smack them around again. And yeah. Didn't we clinch in that Sunday game against them?
I believe so. Oh, this is cool. I just found the list of everyone who got pied. So Melky did three times, A-Rod two, and then one each was Damon, Posada, Swisher, Cervelli, Matsui. Oh, at the end of the list, Castillo, parentheses, okay, not actual pie.
Didn't Juan Miranda have a walk-off, yep. Like at a walk-off error or infield yes. single that hit off Kyle Farnsworth, I think?
A walk-off error was kind of the highlight of the season with Castillo, and then we'll talk about it more in the ALCS.
Oh, yeah.
walk-off errors certainly helped this team.
So I remember very vividly after Matsui, that was the year they started throwing their helmets too. And A-Rod, if you watch the video, has this weird fascination with getting the helmets that are thrown. but Matsui said that he threw his helmet after his walk-off because those are the team rules, but he doesn't like to show a lot of emotion. I remember that very well. But then I'm watching the home runs again yesterday. Matsui pimps the hell out of that. Watch his bat flip after his walk-off home run. It's subtle, but it's there. He's got a little flair to him, so that it, you know, Matsui is not fooling me. But yeah, I mean, regular season was super fun. I don't know about you, but I definitely thought probably after that series in August that this team's going to win the World Series.
Yeah, me too.
I was ready to get hurt again.
but there was still like one more memorable. Well, no, there's two more in my eyes. We had Jeter breaking the team hit record. I just remember like trying to, you know, actually it wasn't really that hard to stay up because I was 19 at the time and working in a restaurant, so didn't really have to be up very early. But there was the long rain delay, and much like his last hit at Yankee Stadium, very Jeter-esque hit to break the record, base hit right inside the right field line. And then I can't believe I was about to skip over this, but we have to talk about the regular season finale because of A-Rod, which is still one of the craziest. I still think that's one of the craziest parts of the regular season. It was just like, no way did he just do this. And you wonder, like, you know, how important was that for him to like take off in the postseason as well, to end his regular season, you know, needing seven RBIs to get to 100 after missing the first month of the season. And he gets it all in one inning on a three-run homer and a grand slam. It was insane.
Pretty good. Teixeira's reaction was even better in the dugout. Teixeira makes a lot of good faces. But, yeah, that was crazy. Crazy clutch. And so he ends the regular season like that. Then they go into the postseason. And, you know, it's – did you have anything else you wanted on the regular season? I'm sorry.
No.
That's a good cap.
No, but now we can get to game one of the playoffs, which gives me anger every time we talk about it.
All right, because Jeter hit a big homer and you could have been there, but you weren't?
Yes.
Because you had racquetball class?
Yes.
Which Dad denies to this day, even though I remember I was going to college at Kane at the time. I was going down the parkway checking prices on StubHub on my phone, which in 2009 was not a great interface.
No.
And I was like, we could go for like $80. Like, let's go. And you're like, I have racquetball.
Yeah.
Dad said I can't. I'm like.
So the backstory is that was my first year in college, and I needed one more credit to be full time. So I just had to throw in a random class. It was racquetball 101. I was like, all right, like, just something to like have fun with. I've never played racquetball before. And it was like Wednesday night once a week. And I had the class. I had never missed it before. And I remember you texting me about the playoff prices. And I was like, okay, like I can definitely do that. Let's go. I mean, it was the Yankees didn't even make the playoffs the year before. Going to the first playoff game at the new stadium, it was you wanted to be there. And then I don't know, we were still living under Dad's roof, so his word kind of had to be followed. And he denies it, but it absolutely is true. Said that we couldn't go because of I couldn't miss school. And yeah, I just remember so well. Like, I missed the first half of the game because of that class. And I remember so well, like, taking a break in between racquetball games or whatever it was, and seeing your text like, Jeter just hit a home run to tie it, and just like wasn't even happy. I was just like, are you kidding me? Could have been at this game. My favorite player hits a huge home run. By the way, I can't believe that home run isn't even shown in the World Series video. That was like, because the Yankees go down early. I don't think so.
I know it's shown in the like the season video.
No, I'm almost positive it's not shown in the World Series video. We have to double check, but that's such a huge moment because, you know, CeCe struggles early, and you think about years past, the Yankees hadn't made it past the ALDS since 2004. They just keep getting knocked out in the first round. And I know it's the Twins, but you're almost like, oh, God, here we go again. Like, not going to get out of the first round. And then Jeter just kind of, like, settles everyone down with that home run.
Yeah, big homer. Would have been nice to be there.
Yeah,
Swisher also had a big hit that game. I remember that too. He hit the double, and then he like pounds his chest when he gets to.
Yeah, very similar to what he did in the big Fenway comeback a few years later.
Yep, last big hit for Swisher in the postseason. First and last.
No, he had the big home run in the 2010 ALCS when they were down 3-1. That was it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
But we have to give him credit for that one.
All right. We give him a little credit.
All right. Well, I mean, then we got game two, which is probably
there's three really good games of the postseason. Game two, and then game four of the World Series. But game three of the World Series is also very underrated.
Game two of the World Series.
Yeah. But game two of the ALDS, I remember – you know, they're down 3-1 and the offense isn't doing it. You're like, this shit again with this team not hitting in the postseason. And you've seen this before, 2005, 2006, 2004, 2007. What the heck is going on? And they're losing 3-1 and, you know, the Twins being the Twins find a way to screw it up. And, I don't know. I remember A-Rod hit that home run just going nuts in the ninth inning. And Teixeira has a big single before that, beats the shift with a line drive. A-Rod gets into a nice count. And I think it's perfect because it's a huge home run for A-Rod's career, probably the biggest in terms of his legacy. I think that's probably what people will look to as the turning point. But it's the prototypical A-Rod homer, too, like – just a little bit to the right of center, just goes with the pitch and just completely crushes it. Does the little flare fist pump to the dugout.
That was
and cool. The place goes nuts.
Yeah, that was great. And then a huge showing by the bullpen. You had
and the umpires.
And the umpires, yes. It's so fun. That was like, you know, you had the left and right field umpires for the postseasons to increase the likelihood of, you know, getting the right call. Replay was only there for home runs still, which we'll get to in the World Series with A-Rod again. But you know, you watch that replay and it's just not even close. It was so obviously fair. You wonder like how he missed it. It was. The left field umpire, he literally just turns right around. He's in perfect position. Melky makes that leap for it, and it's just so clearly a fair ball. But, hey.
I wonder if you could ask the third base umpire from that game and the first base umpire from – or second base, whoever would have the call from the Tony Tarasco, Jeter-Jeffrey Mayer game, what their call would have been, what they would say, and if it would have been different, like if you gave truth serum. Interesting. But anyway, well, it works out for us. And that, this is also the arrival of Houdini, this game.
Yep.
This is a great game. I mean, you get the D-Rob Houdini is born, A-Rod hits a huge homer, and Teixeira.
Also – Also a big game from AJ Burnett, who go on to have another massive game in this postseason. Obviously, you know, it was also typical Burnett because he showed his nasty stuff, only allowing one run in six innings. Also walked five people.
Yeah, that's AJ for you.
and then the Yankees complete the sweep in Minnesota 2 days later
against Carl Pavano.
Yeah, who was shutting them down again? Like the Yankees. The offense wakes up thanks to A-Rod, but in reality, they really didn't show up much. And then you get into game three, and you're like, oh my God, like this is happening again. Like now the Yankees can hit literally Carl Pavano. We've seen this before where the Yankees can hit guys like Jared Wright and Kenny Rogers. it was absurd. Luckily they had Pettit, who would be on the mound for every clinching game. And the offense comes alive late, but they were down 1-0 going into the seventh inning.
Posada homered that game too, right?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah, Posada and A-Rod.
Yep.
Cool. Carl Pavano was left in a little too long.
Just a bit.
And then it's off to the ALCS, first time since 2004.
And away they went.
Yeah, so CC starts his quest for the ALCS MVP in game one, shuts down the Angels. And this was a big deal because the Yankees still really hadn't shrugged that Angels demon off their back. So this was the time to do it. I remember being scared going into the series just simply because of past experiences against the Angels, pretty much the opposite of how you feel going into a series against the Twins.
Yeah.
But they take game one, beat John Lackey. Was this the game? No, I think it was game five then when Socha comes to take out Lackey and he's like really pissed off and he's like, come on coach, this is mine. And Socha's having none of it. He wasn't going to pull a Grady Little.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was game five. Because they were in LA for that this is mine.
Yeah.
Game five, by the way, they almost come all the way back. Well, I mean they do come back, but they almost win that game.
Yep.
A couple tough ones out in LA, of course. Game three and game five, but Yankees would take care of business without a problem.
Yeah, so I mean it starts again, with CeCe's gem in game one, then the Yankees walk off in game two, which was another crazy game because they almost don't even get to that 13th inning because they were losing in the bottom of the 11th.
Yeah, that's another A-Rod two-run homer when you're down by two. Just yeah. Continuing the postseason of A-Rod, which this winds up becoming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was absolutely insane. Then the 13th. You had Jerry Hairston leads it off with a single, and then Cano gets the sacrifice down, and then you just, at that feeling you had a feeling it was over. Didn't think it was going to happen the way it did with an error, but hey, you take it how you can get it.
Exactly.
And then, like you mentioned, devastating loss in game three where the Yankees were looking to just take complete control of the series, but they wind up losing in 11 innings and seems like they pretty much take their anger out in game four after losing that game because they absolutely demolished.
Murdered, yeah.
10-1 in game four.
I always love a playoff game like that. But then they come back and lose game five, and they head back to the stadium, Pettit on the mound again. Good to go.
Yeah, they have the big fourth inning. And I remember what a relief it was in the eighth inning because it had a very game five 2017 feel because they were only winning by one, and you were like, you know, they please just like get some insurance so I can breathe, like. Because when you're up 3-2 in the series, it feels like a game seven because you don't want anything to do with a game seven because it's just too damn stressful. And then the Yankees capitalized on another error when Melky drops down a sack bunt and Scott Kazmir has a throwing error, and then Teixeira has a sack fly later, and that gives them the cushion that they need to kind of get me to settle down at least, and then they're going back to the World Series.
Mo closing it out again with the whistle after the strikeout. I remember that. They still played that. And yeah, I mean, it felt like where they belonged to be. I don't know about you, but for me, this was the most expected World Series. I feel like I don't know, like not expected, like when we were kids, like, oh, the Yankees are the best. It was just like, I don't mean to take away from it, but this was a bought team with one purpose in mind. And they accomplished what they were assembled to do, get to the World Series.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a good blend. Like, the core four was still together, and then they were assisted by the Yankees flexing their financial might, which is, when you have that advantage, of course you should use it. Mm-hmm. And those big pieces came up huge because CC was the MVP of the ALCS. Teixeira had a few big home runs. Burnett won, you know, arguably the biggest must-win game of the season. So all the big signings came through. Of course, we go to the game where there was absolutely nothing to cheer about. It was brutal. I mean, Cliff Lee absolutely shuts the Yankees down. You have like that nonchalant, just like sticks his glove out on that pop up, and Chase Utley absolutely demolishes two home runs. We don't even get to see Jay-Z perform because it was like rainy that night, so they pushed it to game two, and it was like, man, we should have waited to go to game two. That would have been a cool game to be at
for sure. Man, I can't believe we spent that much money to see Cliff Lee just shut them down, but at least Dad stole a bunch of pins.
Yeah, for everyone listening, our dad came back from the bathroom at the game, and he's like, man, they had this huge like tub of all these free pins, and I just grabbed a handful, and obviously they weren't free. It was just, you know, something right on the outskirts of one of the team stores that our dad just reached in and grabbed a bunch, like he was Marv in Home Alone, just reaching his hand into the Salvation Army jar. But anyway,
he thought they were free.
that was hilarious.
Yeah.
All right. So game two, you know, we haven't even mentioned yet that it was Pedro on the mound back in the stadium.
More underrated things of this World Series is that Pedro comes back like the villain that he is.
Yeah. Gets burned by two home runs, Teixeira and Matsui. And then in the seventh, Posada has a huge hit to give Mo a little breathing room, and he does his thing. He pitches two shutdown innings, and the Yankees tie the series, and then it's off to game three. This was on Halloween, right?
Yes. There was a rain delay, right?
Yep.
And Pettit took a nap, was a little sleepy coming out, gives up three runs.
Yeah.
But A-Rod gets them going.
Yep. So this was the game where he hits the camera, right? With the home run. Am I remembering that right?
Yes. He hits the oppo off the home run.
Right off the lens of the camera.
Yep.
So we have our first ever World Series instant replay. And then, the Yankees knock around Cole Hamels, and who comes in after Hamels? Do you remember?
J-Hap.
Yep.
I just knew he pitched in the series. Future. And since you asked me, I figured I would go with it. But
future Yankee legend.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, I think the big thing is Pettit not only settles down and gets an RBI single, right?
Yeah, he plays.
Is it a Ruby single? Yeah.
Yeah, he plays a big part in knocking Hamels out of the game. I remember it was like a lefty-on-lefty breaking ball, and he just kind of like served it to left field. And then Damon doubles him in and helps knock Hamels out of the game. Swisher has a home run this game.
Yeah, I mean, Swisher, Yeah, not a high leverage situation as the Yankees' comeback had already been on. But nice to see him get involved in the mix. And I think Matsui hit a pitch hit home run in his part of this game too, right? Just part of the MVP case continuing.
Yep. And then we get to game four, probably the best game of the series. It's
oh for sure.
Yeah, the Yankees are looking to take complete control of the series. They jump out to an early lead, and then the Phillies chip away.
Jabba gives up a home run. But it was the best inning he looked that World Series. Remember, he looked really good and he just gives up a solo shot.
Yeah.
But the ninth inning has some great drama.
Oh, absolutely. Brad Lidge comes in, who I believe the Yankees had walked off on earlier in the season.
Yes. I think that was a Melky one on a Fox game.
Yeah. And the inning starts with two quick outs, and you're like, oh, God, they're going to be in a position to walk it off here. And then Johnny Damon gets on base with a single and does his thing, which is, man, just incredible heads-up play when he steals second, realizes nobody's near third base, and then it's just a foot race, which Damon can beat a lot of people in a foot race, so he just takes off.
Yeah, I'm glad that Damon has sort of like an iconic moment in the postseason because he had a nice little run with the Yanks, and it's cool to have him sort of in the Yankee lore for the double steal.
Yeah, he's got that, and he's got the home run in 2007 ALDS.
Yeah, but that one's like not as remembered because they lose the next night and it's all over. But this is obviously something that plays direct into the World Series with, you know, he gets the third and Teixeira gets hit by a pitch and then here comes Al.
Yeah. And he just rips that ball down the line, scores Damon. Posada follows with a single, a two run
single. Tries to get the second.
Yep. He must have been really pumped up. But obviously the damage had been done by there. And then Mo just completely shuts them down. It was like two weak grounders and a pop-up. And then the Yankees have control. They lose game five, but certainly take care of business in game six thanks to Matsui.
Oh, yeah. So game six, it's Pettit versus Pedro. And in 2009, we should not be this amped up for this kind of matchup, but we are because Pedro had come back and pitched relatively well. He pitched well in game two. They left him in too long. And Pettit has pitched the clinching game in all the games this postseason. And it's sort of like a combination of this is the team that the Yankees have bought, but this is also the Yankees Yankees stalwarts of old, both rivals and heroes on display. And I remember just being so excited for that game with Andy on the mound. Even though he's on short rest, you knew you were going to get something good out of him. And Pedro walks A-Rod, I think, on four pitches in the second inning.
Yeah, and it was four pitches, and then Matsui works that long at-bat. And I believe during that at-bat, he, like, crushed a foul ball.
He crushed two foul balls. And it was just one of those things where sometimes you watch an at-bat, and you're just like, if this guy's going to get out, he's getting himself out because he's not missing. And Pedro had nothing to get Matsui out with. Nothing. Like, Matsui was all over everything. Every borderline pitch he wasn't fooled on. It was just one of those at-bats where you knew there was an inevitability that Matsui was going to crush something, and boy, did he ever.
Yeah, he destroyed that ball, and then Jimmy Rollins, who predicted the Phillies would win in five, which that was already out the window, but he gets a sac fly to put the Phillies on the board, and then Matsui strikes again against Pedro in the third inning. He, like, poked that line drive, two-run single.
4-0 Yankees, 4-0 Matsui.
Oh yeah. and then again, this time off Hap. And two innings later, he hits that deep double, which I believe it was pretty close to a home run. It was like deep to right center, and like,
John Sterling thought it was a home run.
Yes.
I listened to that call. It was off the wall in right center, I believe. Like right by the auxiliary scoreboard. Yeah. And one of the all-time great clinching games, game six, definitely was thinking about Reggie Jackson while that ball was in the air. Like, is he going to get two, maybe a chance for three, but clears the bases. Pettit pitches fine. He gives, what, 3 runs in 5 2/3 or something like that?
Yeah, it's totally crazy to think about how, like, they went with 3 starters the whole postseason and never faced elimination.
Yeah, that's wild. They never really got close to elimination either, because even though they play 6-game series in the ALCS and World Series, they're up 3-1 in both of those series heading into Game 5. So, you know, that's the thing. There's not as much drama in a lot of these series. I feel like it wasn't as nerve-wracking, but we still got some really nice moments. And one of the more underrated heroes in the World Series was
Marte.
Pretty much a forgotten Yankee most of his time, but Domiso Marte comes up huge in playing a Graham Lloyd-like role in handling.
He did it in Game 6, came in and struck out Howard and then handed the ball to Mo, and that was it.
That was it. You got the ball to Mo, and it was over. And Victorino puts up a long at-bat, and then he just rolls one over to Cano, and that was it. The Yankees are back on top.
Yeah, and a very good balance to sum it up. Ground ball to the homegrown Cano, throws it to the mega free agent contract to Shera, and the Yankees are
all started by the core four legend.
Yep. And the Yankees are our world champs. Still the last one we've been able to celebrate, and hopefully that changes soon. But we also went to the parade. That was madness. It was hard to even see anything. There were so many people.
You know what? There were so many people, but there was this guy I worked with. He wanted to go to the parade together. I was like, I don't know if I'm going, because I really didn't want to go with him. It was kind of annoying. Get on the train. There's thousands of Yankee fans packed into each train car.
Yeah.
Who am I standing right next to? This freaking kid that I didn't want to go to the parade with. Wound up having to hang out with him all day.
That's rough.
Yeah. But anyway, it was awesome. My first parade, and we had a pretty good spot. Saw A-Rod, saw pretty much everybody. A-Rod had an interesting hat on. We were like right across from Spike Lee. I remember I kept seeing Spike Lee. And that was fun. But I mean, looking back on it, I kind of feel two ways about this team. One, they were extremely underrated. Two, I definitely feel the least nostalgia for this team, not just because it's new, but I definitely felt like this was a very much a manufactured title. They went out and paid for it, which, you know, has been true in the past, but this just felt very much like this is what we want to do, this is what we're going to do, and then they went out and did it. It wasn't as like kind of like warm, touchy feely as like 96 or 98 or any of the other ones that they've won. Even like the 2017, 2019 teams definitely feel more connection to those teams than the 09 team. But the 09 team was really, really good, really, really enjoyable. I just definitely felt a little bit of a more corporate feel out of this title, I guess. I don't know if you feel that way too, but still special. Still, I'll take it over. I'll take it over any year that they lost.
I feel like I might have used to feel that way, but I feel like as time went on, like, you know, CeCe went on to become one of my favorite Yankees of all time, and I wound up loving Teixeira as well. He was great. So it's like those big contracts wound up being really, really likable players for years, and that certainly helped.
I would have preferred if they switched like 2009 and 2011, because by then you have more established relationships with the players.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, at the time, like, yeah, like you said, like I become a huge Teixeira fan, a huge CeCe fan. But at the time, it just feels a little odd. But there were also really good stories in there that of guys that contradict what I said, like watching Matsui do what he does that year in the postseason is absolutely awesome. And I mean, definitely a Yankee. I know I was really happy got a ring with the Yankees. And, you know, at the time I was a big Johnny Damon fan. I was glad Johnny Damon came over and got a ring too. Although he had some from his Red Sox days, one from his Red Sox days.
I felt that way about Cano. Was very happy he wound up getting a ring before he left, which still stings.
I mean, at that time, well, it's good that they didn't give him that contract.
Yeah, so good they gave it to Ellsbury instead.
Well, that wasn't smart.
All right.
All right, so here, let me ask you a question. Would you rather have given Cano that contract or
– the answer is probably already yes.
But you wouldn't get Glaber.
I don't know, I probably would have gave Cano the contract because we would have no idea if Glaber was going to become a superstar. Cano already was.
But now you know what I'm saying. Looking back on it from today, if you could have had Cano on, you either take Cano's contract or you have Glaber. Which one would you rather have?
I don't know.
It's a good question.
I don't know.
Either way, you're not wrong. I'm just asking you. I would take Glaber, but
I certainly think that those dull years of 2013 and 14.
He was on the team in 2013.
Well, that was because everyone was hurt except him. But like 2014 and 2015, where they just backed into the playoffs, I certainly think the outlook would have been a little different if they had Cano.
Yeah, I mean, the 2014 team definitely might have been a postseason team.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know.
2015 team might have even scored a run in the wild card game if they had Cano.
That's lefty on lefty. I'll tell you what, though. 2017 team, because you don't lose Glaber because he's not on the team in 2017.
If they had Cano, yeah.
If you have Cano, you might be winning the World Series.
Yeah, because he probably would have gotten you a run or two on the road.
Yeah. I mean, he had 23 homers at Safeco that year and put up a 114 OPS plus. Well, 23 home runs while playing half his games at Safeco.
Yeah.
Was an all-star that season. But, yeah, interesting. Pretty interesting.
All right. So did you pick 2009, right?
I did, sir.
All right. I'll just back it up a decade and we'll do 99 next.
Ah, Champions of the Heart.
Yeah. Probably watch that video to prepare. So everyone, yeah. Watch your 99 highlights, cue your Chad Curtis walk-offs. And
I don't think we're allowed to watch that anymore.
Yeah, probably not. But we will talk about that season next time. Thanks to everyone for listening. And enjoy some KBO baseball in the meantime. And then we'll talk to you next week.
See you later, everybody.